Up next, we're talking money with the man responsible for fee-only financial planning in Ohio, founder of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and expert advisor to the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. It's the only financial planning show on radio, Managing to be Wealthy, with your host, John Sestina.
Good evening. Welcome to Managing to be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Craig Konstantinovich and Cole Hammack and Spencer Hagar. They're all here ready to help us discuss how you two can manage to be wealthy.
Yep. How you doing today, John?
I'm doing better than I deserve, so all is well.
Always a good sign.
So we're going to mix it up a little bit tonight and try to give some folks some different perspectives on some different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to start with when does someone like, you know, a very successful millionaire, for example, do they need a financial planner, and when do they need a financial planner?
Well, let's get one thing straight here. Everyone needs a financial plan. Whether or not you need a financial planner is an entirely different question.
All right, go for it.
So when does that person need a financial planner? As soon as they get to the point where they can't answer all the questions themselves, or if they don't have enough time to do the research to do it. So when you start accumulating good wealth, all of a sudden it starts coming down to, am I tax planning effectively? Do I have all of my right pieces in place? And we find a lot of times when people come to us, they've got a good head start, but they may not have everything synchronized like we expect when we start working and developing their financial plan.
Exactly right. So probably the biggest one is where we help them be more tax efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Because things overlay, they're not taking advantage. I looked at a business today where the client was offered that he should move his 401k into this company he's now working with. And what they said was, he has a plan where currently mm-hmm. where he can be matched 150%. That's
a really
special plan.
Absolutely.
So on the plan he was looking at, which way down in the small print said you had to, number one, maximize the 401k plan. Didn't even know what the investments were in a 401k plan.
Uh-huh.
And number two, they would match 50% of the first 6%, something like that, match. And it was nowhere near. So you have to look at the details and the tax efficiency. Yes, he should take advantage of a 401k, but not that one.
Exactly.
So that's a matter of tax efficiency. Most people aren't paying any attention to that. They tend to think in terms of, well, I'm going to make all this money. I'm going to make $100,000 a year. I'm going to pay $15,000, $20,000 a year in taxes, and then I'm going to invest another $10,000. Well, that's very inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to walk them through that, help them to discover where they should place their funds and how to use those tools, as we discuss,
right,
that are far more helpful to them.
And the biggest piece, too, is when you're looking at that, tax efficient doesn't necessarily mean, hey, let me just look at my 401k.
Right.
It may mean, let me look at possibly contributing to a Roth or doing a Roth conversion, investing in non-taxable investments.
Yep.
Basically, the tax efficient or the tax managed models that are out there. There's a lot of times where those can be good investments, whether that's a municipal bond, whether that's a particular group of investments that's more tax efficient, trying to focus on not realizing or providing as many dividends and interest that'll be taxable to you. Those things all start to come into play when you start accumulating large amounts of wealth and are reaching consistently that top tax bracket year over year.
Yes, and using your family and the tools we discuss, how you can divvy up things among your family members and thereby save taxes. Because remember, the government wants to build the pot bigger and bigger and bigger, one large pot, because you get up that scale to the mm-hmm. top scale. Whereas what we like to do is divide it.
Mm-hmm.
So as you divide it, you have smaller pots that are taxed at different lower levels. And so that's something very, very important.
Yep.
Well, what's another thing they should think about?
My goodness. So this is arguably one of the most important ones. And we hear this far too many times, especially in the news nowadays, but either not having an estate plan or it just being in complete disarray.
Absolutely. And yep. It could be as simple as not having a will, not having assets owned correctly if you have a trust, looking at other ways where maybe the estate plan, the attorney's given you the recommendation, they've given you the documents, but maybe they just don't have the actual execution of getting everything updated. And this is more and more common from what we see. Trust funding, especially if it's a revocable or a living trust, all most times all people think they need to do is oh, I'm just going to throw my trust in as the contingent beneficiary for my stuff through work, life insurance, 401k, and I'm good. I don't need to do anything else.
Right.
And how many times, Cole, have we seen it where all the assets that are outside of the actual workplace now all of a sudden aren't included in the trust and they could be subject to probate expenses?
Far too many. Far too many. And other assets as well. I mean, you have your home, cars, things like that. That, I mean, that's a substantial part of your estate that is oftentimes overlooked.
Exactly. And so part of this is a part of what the financial plan does is coordinate and synchronize and integrate so that the whole program is going to flow rather smoothly and more beneficially to you. Okay, so what else should we think about?
The other big thing is when you get to retirement, now all of a sudden you've got all this money that's out there. You've worked and worked and saved, and now you've got money all over the place. How do you start withdrawing from your assets? What's your tax plan for withdrawing from the investments? That's the next big area, and that could be maybe your, at certain ages, different accounts now become available to you. Well, which one do I pull from for tax purposes? Am I required to take anything from any accounts? What if I have an unexpected large expense? How do I plan for that? So there's different ways that we can do that. But for example, Spencer, what's some of the IRA rules or the 401k rules that most people either aren't or are only somewhat aware of?
Well, one of the big rules is pretty standard just with the IRAs. You're going to have to start pulling what they call an RMD or a required minimum distribution at 70 and a half.
Absolutely. We hit that up pretty good last week, huh, John?
I think we did. We did RMD in. So that's why I wanted to diversify a little bit today so we weren't so focused and people's eyes weren't bulging out of their head. You know, a little bit of diversification. Well, speaking of being prepared for stuff, another is incapacity.
Yeah.
So when you become incapacitated, what do you do then? How do you organize? How do you withdraw? And we're finding, as we have some much older clients, we're running into Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in an event like that? And as we have seen, that can be really tricky sometimes. And you even look at the large estate, Aretha Franklin, who had no will. She had mm-hmm. nothing. And here was a wealthy woman. And then there was, who was the other, the guy?
Prince?
No, Prince. He too was messed up, wasn't he? But also the cowboy. Yeah. Oh, shucks.
Burt Reynolds?
Burt Reynolds. Thank you very much.
As soon as you said cowboy, it triggered.
Yep, he did that. Right, driving that car down the road, right?
Oh, my
and,
gosh.
And so what he did was they thought his son was disinherited
mm-hmm.
because he wasn't named in the will, but he was provided for in the trust.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there was all sorts of things you can do for yourself and for others. But this needs to be put in play before you are incompetent or
right.
incompetent or incapable of doing what you want to do.
And that's where, you know, we're always sitting down talking with our clients about what needs to be done or what needs to be adjusted because things change over time. You know, just because you set up your estate plan 20 years ago doesn't mean that the people are still correct, your wishes are still outlined correctly, or that the needs of your heirs are going to be addressed.
Exactly right. I know Bobby and I are going through another revision of our estate plan.
Oh, to include me, right?
No, to remove you, Craig.
Oh, shoot.
So, and it hasn't been that long since we had set it up originally, but we're going to make some significant changes and trustees and people like that
mm-hmm.
so that the whole plan works better for everyone involved.
And that's the big thing is just making sure that it's planned based on your wishes, because a lot of times people think that their wishes are outlined and then they come to find out that the legalese that they have written into their documents isn't accounted for.
Exactly right. And is that why we might call this managing to be wealthy?
Yeah. Look at that. Look
I get
at
it,
that.
Man. So that's what we're trying to help people do, manage to be wealthy. So often I'll meet people, they say, what do? I say, I help people become wealthy and more importantly, keep them wealthy. And
there
that's kind of what the financial planning does, even when you're near retirement, no matter what your wealth is. Well, it looks like we have to take a break, guys. So you are listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN.
You're listening to the only financial planning show on radio. Taking your questions tonight is WTBN's own resident money expert, certified financial planner, author of Planning a Successful Future, and founder of one of America's leading financial planning firms, John Sestina.
Good evening. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina. With me tonight, Cole Hammack and Craig Konstantinovich, both certified financial planners, and our young Spencer Hagar, who's already helping as much as he can. Good job so far, Spencer.
Great work, Spencer.
So we're trying to walk through some diversified areas of time of financial planning, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, some people think when you get to be wealthy, then it's all done, or perhaps when you get to be retired, there's nothing more to consider. So we want to move that along a little bit. We want to talk about retirement. I know every financial planning show talks about retirement, but we're going to talk about some things that you ought to consider doing before you retire.
Right.
Because that's a pretty important question, because some people, I saw a young person who said they wanted to retire at 52, and when they did the calculations, they had like $100,000 worth of money to do it. There was no way that was going to happen.
Right.
So we have to move it along. So let's kind of walk through some of the things that someone looking forward to retirement should put in place before they make that big move.
I think step one, and I mean, this is pretty straightforward, you would think, but it's as simple as knowing what you have. So oftentimes, especially as you're going through life, maybe work two, three jobs along the way, you start accumulating wealth, but in different places. So maybe you have a 401k here, an IRA there. But to know what you have, where it is, and maybe to consider consolidating those things, really simplifying your plan, can help a great deal as you're navigating to retirement.
You mean instead of having 18 IRA plans, just have one or something of that nature?
Somehow that might be helpful.
Yeah, so it would make it less confusing when you look at the list on your net worth statement for sure.
Exactly, and that's another piece to that puzzle here too, just to build off of what we talked about last week. Now all of a sudden, if you have 8 or 10 different IRAs or 401ks, you could have the equivalent required minimum distributions that you'll have to balance across all of them. So it all comes together here and helps us kind of get a consolidated view, have a plan of attack, and know exactly what piece needs to move to make the other pieces move the way we want.
And that's always the most difficult thing for the new client to appreciate, mm-hmm. is getting all the data together.
Absolutely.
And confirming everything you have. It's not that we don't trust clients, we just verify. Because sometimes they believe, you know, that so-and-so is, I don't know, beneficiary of the IRA, and it really is their previous spouse, or maybe their mother's still on the life insurance policy, or so many other things, or they can't find stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just ran into someone today who he couldn't find the title to his car.
Jeez.
I've just gone through that myself. So now how do you get a new title? Well, you can do it, but it's a few steps and takes a little bit of time to do it. So you might as well get this all together, and we help them do that.
So wait, do you still have that plaque from way back when? The one that says picky on it still?
Yep, I still do that wooden plaque. This client actually gave me after a couple of years of working with me, and it was a wooden plaque, and it said, picky, picky, picky. Absolutely right. And you know what? The older I get, the pickier I become.
We know.
So gathering the data, getting everything together, formulating where you are is very, very important. But what's another thing they should consider?
You know, I think another large part is just mapping out what your budget in retirement is going to be like, because your expenses once you retire aren't necessarily going to be the same they were before you reached that period. So what expenses aren't going to be the same, whether it's expenses for what your work is, and then what's going to increase, recreational activities or travel, things like that.
So you're talking about, oh no, if Tony were here,
oh boy,
he'd be really excited.
I can hear it in my head right now. Cash reserve and cash flow.
Oh, there we go. Cash reserve and cash flow. It's so amazing that so few people really know how much money they're spending, where the money is going. And that's part of the efficiency, the synchronization, that's important to have a solid plan.
Absolutely.
So you have to know what the heck you're doing and where the money is going. And well, some would call that a budget. We don't call it a budget. We call it a cash flow worksheet, because a budget is flat and people get frustrated after a couple of months. But we want it to be as erratic as life is. And so, you know, if you have a life insurance premium due in 6 months, you put it in 6 months. You don't divvy it up by every previous month. So get that budget in place. What else should they consider?
The other big one to consider, and, you know, again, not to be doom and gloom, but that's how everything seems to shape up anymore. Read up on what healthcare costs are.
Oh,
yeah. Good luck reading all that info.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And just look at the emails you get.
My gosh.
Because, you know, I'm a little older.
No, you don't say.
I get these emails almost every hour, it seems, about all the ways to pay for healthcare. And in fact, we were looking at a company who quote unquote provides healthcare around the world,
mm-hmm.
using Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, there's so much complexity.
Absolutely.
That when you're sitting there trying to make that decision, but what does it cost? I mean, as you get older, as your parts stop working, And so, you know, you have to have that knee replaced, or, you know, your back hurts or whatever is going on in your life. And you go see the doctor and the doctor says, take two aspirins and call me in 2 days. But you have to do those things because stuff will happen.
Right.
Your teeth, for example, you're going to go to the dentist. You may not have dental coverage.
Yeah.
Of course, you probably don't have dental coverage. Medicare doesn't pay dental coverage. Medicare doesn't pay dental coverage. So you go there and you the doctor says, well, you need to do an implant. And, you know, that's a couple thousand bucks. And you say, good gracious, I don't have a couple thousand bucks. So how do you get that in place? You have to figure that out in your budget as well.
And that's one of the biggest things. And that's where we also have open enrollment for those that are eligible for Medicare. That's coming up here shortly in the next couple weeks. So be certain that you are taking a look at what your previous year's worth of health expenses were. Where did you use your medical expense dollars? What didn't you use? And if you have any questions, don't be afraid to reach out and try to find someone that is somewhat aware of what's going on, but make sure that you understand what their cost for getting their expertise may be, because the last thing you want to do is be sold a policy just because you have a specific need. And that's where our job has always been for our clients, to find the best available resources at the minimal or the smallest or minimal expense to them, to make sure that they're getting the coverage that they need, but at the lowest premium for them.
Yes, Cole?
And my goodness, this is only the first part of the battle too. So we talked about health insurance, healthcare. I mean, that's straightforward. We know we're going to need it in some capacity, but the one a lot of people don't think about, or maybe try not to, is long-term care needs in the future too.
Now you're really starting to spook me, Cole.
What do you mean long-term care, Cole? What are you talking about? Everyone's going to be perfectly healthy until they drop dead at 200.
Until they're not. Until they're not. So some statistics say 70% of seniors age 65 and over may have some sort of long-term care need in the future. So you might not be able to get around quite like you used to, go to the bathroom, you know, the things we don't want to talk about. We'll leave it at that. But definitely something to take into consideration as you're planning for your aged years.
And they do happen in the latter years. When you look at the medical, these healthcare expenses, the majority of these costs do happen in the last 3 to 5 years, you know, because you're pretty worn down by then. And so there's a lot of help you may need.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, long-term care insurance, it's still an evolving creature. As far as the insurance world's concerned, it's the baby when compared to life insurance and disability insurance. So since there's a lot of these movements, a lot of these changes, you want to be certain that if there is a policy that you are going to go out there and purchase or consider, that you understand what the pros are of that policy, what the cons are, and what gaps there might be. Because not all of them are created equal.
There's gaps?
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness. I think that's another show.
That's a whole show.
Absolutely.
Exactly right.
Absolutely. But make sure that you're asking those questions going into it, because you want to make sure that you are completely aware of what your policy covers and what it doesn't.
Exactly right. And well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the biggie that everyone knows is going to take care of them forever, Social Security.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
going to be the biggie. If you do that backwards, inflation-wise, you'll see. I always remind you that I have the original brochure for the original Social Security. And believe me, it doesn't look anything like what it looks like now. Well, we'll deal with some Social Security when we come back. In the meantime, you're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Craig Konstantinovich, Cole Hammack, both certified financial planners, and Spencer Hagar. We're trying to give you some insights as to what you should do as you're getting ready to retire or thinking about it, and some of this maybe are surprises to you that pop up. So
wait, John, when are you retiring?
Retirement. See, I'm only 76, so
right.
I got a little while to go yet.
Okay. All right. Just making sure. Making sure.
So, you know, when you carry me out feet first, Bob and Cole and all of you.
There we go.
It'll be fine. So speaking of this, we left off by saying we're going to touch a little bit on Social Security, which is a major factor in most people's retirement plan. So what are some of the considerations people should have regarding Social Security?
The first thing is, well, what are your goals? And more importantly, what are your goals and what time frame do you expect to complete those goals? For Social Security, there's all sorts of calculators that are out there. There's all sorts of numbers that we're going to throw at you. But the most important thing is to figure out, when are you going to, quote, break even on what you've been paying in over the years? And what other health factors may determine what that time period is? So start off with that. What are your goals? How much do you need? And when do you need it? For example, if you're not going to retire until, let's say, age 70, or John, in your case, maybe age 80 or 90 or whenever, you want to wait to start taking Social Security, because this is the getcha. All of a sudden, your benefits become taxable to you.
Right.
So if, let's say, you retire and you have $100,000 worth of income and you get $30,000 from Social Security, your taxable income now is $130,000, versus in retirement, if you're doing good planning, you could actually have income that's going to be less than that $100,000. So the actual adjusted gross income, or the total income number, will be lower, meaning you'll get more of your Social Security benefits.
Wait a minute. What are you saying here, Craig? I mean, after all, when I made my contributions to Social Security, they were not tax deductible.
You know, I wish they were, but
well,
no.
Then why are they taxable when I get them?
John,
I know, it's a government.
I was going to say, it's government. If it made sense, they wouldn't have a job still,
so
right?
So we got to go back to the four words, right? Reasonable, logical, right? Those kind of things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So be aware that this takes some thinking, and you're right about that. When do you take it? And there's all kinds of off-the-wall examinations that people will tell you, but it really does depend on you individually.
Right. So the earliest that you can take it would be age 62, and then the oldest that you can take it is age 70. They say, and this is right now still been proven, each year you wait after your full retirement age, which will vary from 66 to 67 for most of our listeners, the longer you wait, you earn more credits or more interest on your benefits. So let's say your full retirement age, which it was age 67, if you wait till age 70, you're going to get 3 years of an 8% increase every single year.
Right. So it's important for you to examine, as you said, some of the things like, what is your family history?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did your father and mother live to be 100? Well, then you can afford to better wait to 70 to take the money. But if you have a short lifespan, you know, that people die at age 70, then you might want to start it earlier, 67, whatever your age is, your full earnings age. So watch this Social Security.
Absolutely. And then the other aspect, too, as far as planning is concerned, let's say that you're one of those few that saves up and is just able to sock away money during their working years, and you retired early, let's say at age 55. Now, all of a sudden, you may get to the point where Social Security makes sense to take it early, because you've been doing the prudent thing and you've been putting money into a Roth account, whether that's a 401k or an IRA over time. Now, all of a sudden, that's tax-free money. And if you take that out in retirement later years, all of a sudden, you could be in a much better tax situation.
Exactly. Cole?
Or flip side to that, say you have a pension. So pension's coming in after you retire. You might be able to maybe suck it up a little bit, receive that pension income, and defer Social Security until maybe later in your life.
Exactly right. And so the other question is, well, what about, should my spouse start at 62 and I start at 70? How do we do all that stuff?
Well, unfortunately, Social Security a couple years ago took away some of the fun goodies that we had, like the file and suspend method.
Right.
But since that's on the wayside here, again, kind of look at what your goals are here and what you hope to accomplish. I think back to a couple that I'm working with right now, where the spouse is about 5 years younger than her husband, and she's looking at taking her retirement benefits earlier because her family history indicates she's going to live a shorter lifespan, and because he was the breadwinner of the couple, his benefit is actually going to be more beneficial to wait to take that.
Right.
So they're balancing that between her Social Security benefit and their retirement savings, and then we'll turn his benefit on later. Again, playing the numbers and everything else to make it actually work out better for them.
So this Social Security is so simple, Craig.
Absolutely.
And Cole. I just can't imagine why the consumer would be so confused by all of this. But indeed, this is part of planning. And
right.
It's part of the synchronization, integration, all the things I've said earlier. That's very, very important for your long-term financial success. What we're trying to do is, if you're going to retire, make sure you get the most for your money, the savings and all the other stuff going on. Spencer, do you have something? Okay. So let's see here. What else is important that is non-financial that you ought to think about, guys?
Well, you know, I think a big part is just kind of expanding on what we were talking about with the cash flow sheet is really trying to figure out what your plans are and what you want to do in the retirement period. So kind of recreational activities, maybe if you're planning on moving somewhere, things like that. You really want to deep dive and get a better idea of what you're going to be spending.
Right. Well, what are you going to do with your time? I mean, this is one of the biggest complaints that you see from people who retire, because they retire and they think they're going to sit on the porch and watch the grass grow.
Right.
Well, that's typically not for the kind of folks we're used to dealing with. They're far more energetic, let's say, and they want to go for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be aware of that. And should you jump on a plane and move right down to South Carolina tomorrow?
Oh, gosh. You mean California?
No. Gee, Christmas, please. I have to go there Monday. I don't want to talk about
that. Oh, man. Well, didn't mean to rub
the salt in the wound there. Boy.
But no, I mean, like you said, John, the biggest thing is, you know, understanding where you're going to be living, getting familiar with it, what that cost of living may be. And Spencer, like you had mentioned, every day's a Saturday now. You know, if you want to go out and play two rounds of golf every single Saturday, well, now you've got seven Saturdays to do that. Does your budget allow for you to have that opportunity? Or do you want to try to find a new blend, a new hobby? Maybe you do want to work, but you don't want to be forced to work. You want to find work that you enjoy and maybe only work part-time, something like that.
That almost sounds like we're focusing on goals.
Well, that's true. You need to have some goals. But, you know, so often people want to pick up and move to Florida. People are leaving Florida now. They're moving to the Carolinas and other states like that that also do not charge income taxes. But you can't, if you pick up and move and now you're going to buy a house in this new territory, you don't know anyone, you're not familiar with the neighborhood. So if you're going to do something like that or you're thinking about it, very, very important for you and your spouse to go to the town that you're thinking about and rent for a while. Mm-hmm. Spend some time down there, maybe through a couple of seasons so you get a feel for it, because you may be very, very surprised. Plus, after a very short period of time, you may be missing the grandchildren and the birthday parties and all that other fun stuff that's out there. So just jumping on a plane and moving may not be the best solution for you. So we'll talk a little bit more when we come back, but in the meantime, we want you to continue to manage to be wealthy. You can always call our office at 614-326-3077 and set up a complimentary appointment with one of our planners. In the meantime, it's time for us to take another break on 610 WTVN.
We're talking all your money questions live. It's financial planning. It's investments. It's managing to be wealthy. With your host, America's father of fee-only financial planning, SIFA's Financial Planner of the Year, and a nationally recognized source for financial planning advice, John Sestina.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Cole Hammack, Craig Konstantinovich, both certified financial planners, and we have Spencer Hagar with us, and we're trying to share with you some ideas that you should consider prior to retirement before it's too late.
That would be fantastic if only everyone planned what retirement would look like before they got to retirement.
You know, it's so funny because every now and then we'll get a client, you know, now we're going to do this comprehensive stuff and got it all organized. And so when you're going to make any decision, just contact us first so we can help you make a decision. And then we get an email, I just bought a new house.
We sure
do. Oh, that or better yet, they'll give you the phone call. I just put the down payment down for the new home.
Yeah, will you help me now?
I'm not sure what this means, but can you work through the paperwork with me?
So when going into retirement, this is a biggie, biggie, biggie. And we're going to talk a little bit about whether or not you should consider renting or buying when you go into retirement or when you're in retirement. So where should we go with that, guys?
So the first thing is, one, where are you going to be living? We talked about this a little bit earlier on, but are you familiar with kind of what's going to be going on in that area? Is it an area that you want to stay in, or are you going to be traveling frequently? You know, I'm thinking back to someone that I'm working with right now where they said, my goal is to literally travel every month of the year, but my birthday month, January, in which case I want to be home, I want to see my family, grandkids, everything else. They were like, but I'm going to buy a house. And I said, Listen to what you just said, and why would buying a house make any kind of sense?
Right.
So we had to walk through that with them and show them the benefits of renting. Thankfully, they listened. So now that's the plan, is we're going to be renting. But it comes back to what we've talked about. What are your goals? What are your living expenses? And what do you want to do? Because now all of a sudden you've got all this free time to do it in. So that would be the first thing, kind of walk through those. But then also, as you're looking at it, kind of take a look at what else may not be available to me, or maybe I didn't secure before I got to retirement. So everyone wants to look at their home as an investment. And John, I know you've done several shows and talked to us in depth about how it's not an investment.
Exactly.
But this is one case where it may be not an investment, but a piggy bank. And Cole, what exactly am I talking about with as far as, you know, the home being a piggy bank?
Oh, I love this one. So for our retirees ages 62 and older, you can actually tap into the home equity of your home. So that is the amount that the home is worth, less what you may owe on the home, using what's called either a reverse mortgage or maybe a fancier program is called a home equity conversion mortgage, which is effectively the same thing, but it's government-backed. But the benefit really to the retirees is to be able to pull from the equity within your home and use that for lifestyle. So whether that's creating a line of credit almost you can pull from as needed, or to, in some cases, maybe provide income throughout your retirement, or, you know, some clients will even use the program to pay off a mortgage entirely so they're not stuck with those payments for, in some cases, the rest of their lives.
And we also see this as being used for long-term health care.
Absolutely.
Because here you are, you open it up at 62, you don't use it, you just open it and it grows.
Mm-hmm.
The amount available to you does grow. And so now when you're in those last 3 to 5 years and you're struggling, one source of revenue, tax-free, is through this program on your home. So that could be a use right there that may be exciting to some folks.
Yeah, that. And then the beautiful part is, everyone thinks that when, hey, that idea of a nursing home comes up or long-term care expenses, that, well, it's just going to be both of us. That's just how it's going to be. Too many times, that's not the case. It's just one in the couple that's actually needing the long-term care expense or the long-term care assistance. And what this program allows you to do is possibly float both lifestyles if it's a temporary need, or if it's something that's going to be longer term, bridge the gap between when that need is incurred, and then also kind of get ready for maybe I do need to go to a long-term care facility. Maybe there's other planning techniques I can have involved. So this is where having the home, if you have the equity in the home before you get to retirement, a powerful tool that you can then use, whether that's for lifestyle expenses, medical needs, you name it. It's all part of the planning process, though, because if we don't talk about this beforehand, by the time something like this comes up, it's already too late and we've missed our shot.
Well, and the other issue regarding quote-unquote mortgages, I mean, a home equity is not a mortgage, but when you have a mortgage on your home, and more retirees are retiring with mortgages on their home.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Which is pretty amazing, because in the good old days, you used to say, when I retire, when I have my house paid.
Yep.
And that may or may not make some sense, but it does create, if you have a mortgage, it may create anxiety for the retired person. And after all, what we're about is peace of mind.
Exactly.
So you may want to consider, what can you do prior to retirement to pay that mortgage before you do retire? But if it's not going to affect your cash flow in retirement, you know, if that $1,000 a month mortgage is there and you can easily afford it out of the resources you have, then you may not have to worry about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue of a retired person as they have a house, and I can speak of this very clearly, is the maintenance of a home.
No, there's no maintenance.
I mean, I'm here today and there are two guys on these super duper honcho lawn choppers called lawnmowers, and they're out there cutting my grass in this rain. Okay, so there's somebody has to do that. There's someone who has to paint the place, or someone who has to repair the little thing that we have a little raccoon who is great, very, very friendly.
Nice.
And what she likes to do is build her nest in a corner of the roof outside and run over the roof so I can hear her in my office every day. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you should just sleep with headphones in, or, you know, earplugs or something like that, so you don't hear.
Or 45, one or the other.
Are you charging her rent, John?
But then I put a hole in the roof. So we have to hire someone who comes out there and pays attention to this and destroys the nest, gets rid of the raccoon, and that's a once-a-year chore now.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have lovely deer in our backyard, and there's herds of them. I mean, literally herds of them.
Yeah.
And they seem to like every flower and plant that Bobby plants. And so dear, sweet-minded Bobby, if she could see one of them and it was legal, she might have one of those, gun things and do her own hunting on the spot. So maintenance can be a major, just the nuisance of it.
Absolutely.
Let alone the cost of it. You may be able to afford it, but the nuisance of it can be a great strain on your retirement. So consider that about ownership.
And maintenance, I mean, that's certainly one part, but my goodness, another is stairs. Oh. So it definitely makes sense. Maybe you're 55, you're living in that home. Maybe you're gearing up for retirement, whenever that age is. But think about when you're 75, you're 80, however old, and you have to worry about getting up and down stairs, maybe traversing. I'm trying to be as innocuous as possible, John, but I care about you. I do.
I have two flights of stairs.
But you know what? You just had that knee taken care of.
Yeah, right.
Do you have a lift installed, John?
What's that?
So do you have a lift installed?
Am I going to leap across this table and choke you? Or what?
It's because I care.
Well, you know, a lot of Bobby is a retired nurse, and a lot of her journals are now saying that if you're retired, you should not have a single floor plan.
Really?
You should have stairs. And the reason is it gives you the exercise.
Huh.
And as a person gets retired, they tend not to exercise very much. And so the staircase, when I have to go up and down for two flights of stairs, I'm getting a little bit of exercise as I do that.
Right.
Well, that so is responsible.
It's very, very important for people to consider that as well. And times change.
Yeah.
And if your health is good, you may continue to want to have stairs that you can enjoy. But the other piece of this is then, and we're kind of insinuating as we go through this whole process, with renting, you don't have any of those issues.
Correct.
The hot water heater breaks, you call the landlord.
That's
beautiful.
The roof
leaks, you call the landlord. And so some of that may make your life a little easier when you retire. So that's one thing to consider. Well, looks like we're running out of time, guys. And so we hope we've given you some ideas out there to consider when you're thinking about retirement and whether or not you need a financial plan. If the rich need it, you need it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN.